good morning, everybody, and welcome to the WBRX wake-up call. It's a great day here. We just came off of a nice holiday weekend, Thanksgiving Day weekend, and last week was just a great week, so much to be thankful for. And I think a lot of people that, you know, we had a chance to communicate with and talk with, you know, have already started kind of setting their goals for 2021. And, you know, my partner was talking to me. You hear from him in a little bit here. You know, in most cases, you know, people that are familiar with goal setting, they don't always just set their goals really so much forecasted on the next year, like on the New Year's Day or New Year's Eve, what have you. They're doing it all the time, right? But this year has been a little bit of a different year, 2020. And so I think that, you know, many of us are saying, hey, 2021, what a great time to start laying out your plan and designating a real way to go out and accomplish some of those goals that you have for 2021. And I think that we as a company are pretty excited about 2021 for a lot of reasons. I mean, obviously, you guys really are, you're the highlight. I mean, it's really the leadership within the company that has determined, you know, how excited we are to go out and work with every one of you, you know. And I want to just say to you guys, I know when you get to become part of an organization, you start learning the culture and the nuances, and you know, whether you agree or disagree, it's just the way that it's kind of what we refer to as the WBRX way. You know, we are guys and gals that have, you know, kind of defined some principles out there that we've decided to live our life by. Not that we came up with or we originated or we're the author of. We don't stretch to make anybody believe that. It's really a subset of principles. And those are principles that are guiding us in our decision making. And you know, to the extent that we have people that become part of our culture or organization, they identify with those principles and they say, you know what, that kind of makes sense. And we come together. In some cases, we agree to disagree, right? And that's okay. I mean, you know, I had a gentleman talk to me not too long ago about, or had a little bit of a rub on the fact that, you know, we're so big about being on time. And I said, hey, listen, I want to let you know, I understand that some people think it's okay because life is life and that they can be late now and then, but I said, that's just not the way we roll. I mean, we're going to maintain, and I'm not trying to change their world. I'm just saying that's how our company, that's just one example, and just one example, right? But there's a lot of little things that we define, and we just try to, you know, open these calls up full of information that we believe and hope that will be as helpful to you as they have been to us, because these principles that guide us and direct us and the information that we're sharing with you, believe it or not, there was a point in time where I didn't know anything about this information. I had to learn it in most cases for me, as I was making, I probably have made more mistakes in this business than anybody on this call. I think that that's probably one of the reasons why, you know, I've been fortunate and blessed enough to have some success, because although I've made a lot of mistakes, I've tried to learn from those mistakes and kind of make some modifications and set up some new disciplines for the future and correct the errors of the past. That's all I've really done. But it's not that I went out there and kind of spot on, knew what to do. I just tried to learn from what I was doing and then make modifications and move forward. And so what these calls are really the genesis of these calls, and the subject matter and the content is really based upon providing you guys with a landscape that can help direct you and keep you off of the landmines and keep you focused on the direction and the path that will lead you to the shortest distance between two goals as fast as possible. That is our objective. That is completely our objective. It's to help you. Some people try to teach, to try to get people to learn, which is important. Our focus is to teach you so that you can get results. And in our experience, the results kind of take care of the belief. They take care of the vision. It's a multitude of things that happen if you can just help people stay focused in on what they need to do to have results. Doesn't mean that people are going to agree with you. Sometimes it takes individuals much longer than others. Some people come to the dance and they say, hey, show me the steps and I'll follow the direction. That's a much easier gig than people that come to the dance and say, you know what, I've got my own ideas about how to accomplish the outcome, and it takes sometimes a little bit longer. That's been my experience. I have been in many cases, you know, believing that I knew more about, you know, what to do than the teacher. And it was not necessarily took a longer time. So everybody has that pattern. Our objective, guys, is to help you build and develop a business within WBRX where you can have success, have results, and then those results will then lead you to bigger and better outcomes faster. So we've got a great, you know, team here, man. We've got all the reason in the world to look out at 2021 as we close out 2020, you know, and look at the outcomes and the possibilities. What we've accomplished in 2020, guys, I will tell you from the people I've talked with in the industry is almost unheard of. We've been able to navigate a new company at a particular point in time and grow and develop our business, have hundreds of new brand partners and medical doctors enrolled within our business, not because we are out just gaining momentum because of the environment and the momentum because of what was going on in the market. There was all the odds stacked against us, but what we did, what we were fortunate to do because of you and because of great leadership with our medical providers and otherwise, is we were able to take the challenges that went on in the environment and make them work in our best interest. We're able to take, you know, a pandemic where everyone was shut down and start, you know, creating a lot of venues with our Zoom calls and opportunities for us to have individuals that are out duplicating that and information. And then as we were able to have meetings where possible and when possible, we just had great leaders that got involved and started duplicating that process. And so here we are today, closing out 2020 and looking forward to 2021. I was having a conversation, I think, with Mike Brunell, and, you know, we're already kind of planning, you know, outcomes for the future. I was asking Mike, you know, last year was a kind of a surprise, and we were planning on a leadership retreat. Tell me where you'd like to, you know, if you had a choice of locations, where would you rather have a leadership retreat? Would you rather have it at a resort, or would you rather have it, on a cruise? And, you know, we had that great conversation. So, those are the conversations, guys, that we're having. We're planning outcomes. We're looking at the ways that we can start incorporating our travel plans. We're looking at we're revamping our compensation plan. So now you can make up to over $14,000 by helping one individual accomplish what's required to get to the top of our compensation plan. Okay, that's just one individual. And that's an exciting thing, because if you have two or three or four accomplish that within the same month, then you can just do the math, right? So we're excited, genuinely excited about what's going on. And with that, guys, I'm going to now get into, the information and the content, the information about, what we've been talking about now for the last four or five weeks. And I started a series where we started talking about the various skills required to help grow and develop your business, because every business requires a subset of skills, things that you have to become better at, things that you have to understand, things that you can understand what you have to do so that you can move the needle in that process. And ultimately, every business and anybody that's going to run a business requires this type of information. So we've talked about the different skills, right? The first skill, you know, go back, quick review, is finding prospects, what's required to develop and find those prospects. The second skill is learning how to effectively invite those prospects, to any event, whether it be a actual event that you're going to, or whether it's a Zoom call or a conference call. Just the ideology, the thinking, the circumstances, the psychology involved. The third was then understanding the context of presenting, the WBRX products and the WBRX business model. And then the last one that we just finished up with last week was the following up with your prospects, understanding that skill, that the revenue and the dollars are really, the money is in the follow-up, right? So that's a big one. Now today, what we're going to cover is really helping, you know, those prospects that you've gone through some of these bits of information. They've tried the product. Our six-step marketing plan is to make sure people try and use the product. Can't can't circumvent that. They got to try the product. The second is make sure that you're conveying to that prospect, because you've already used the product, how it's worked effectively for you, your personal testimony with respect to the product. The third is what, you know, making sure that they have a chance to try a free sample. I'd recommend that you don't circumvent that process, that people do try free samples that you've given them, because what they're always evaluating is what you did with them. Not what you said, but what you did. And you have to make sure that what you're doing is duplicatable. You have to make sure that what you're doing is something that they say to themselves, hey, you know, here's what Sean did with me. Could I do that? Well, what did he do? He talked to me about these amazing results he had with the product. And you know what he did? He just basically gave it to me. What did Mitchell do? Well, he just kind of touched base with me, told me about something he's excited about, probably the most exciting business experience of his career. And the fact that he, you know, just sent me some free samples, I thought that was pretty amazing. JP, what did he do? Well, he talked to me about the results he had. He's a medical doctor, and he just gave me some product. I mean, you'd be shocked and amazed at the results that you'd have if you focused in on just those two things. Because the delivery of that says so much. It speaks volumes, more than most people recognize. Even though in most cases, all of you that have had personal interaction with myself or Sean, that's basically what we did. We shared, we cast some vision, we shared a little bit about our background, talked about the results that we've had and other people have had with the product, and we gave your product or gave your prospect's product. So duplicating that simple behavior then leads to a result, right? It leads to people that then become, which is what we're going to talk about today, become customers or become brand partners, become a form of distribution within your company. And so what I want to do today is I want to start talking about the skill of helping your prospects become either customers, okay, or brand partners, basically points of distribution of growing and developing a business. Now, this skill, I want to promise you, it's a natural byproduct of following up in a very professional way. Okay, it's a byproduct, right? So as you walk through the exposure, after you've, kind of gone through the information, our goal is really education. We've always talked about that. And understanding. Okay, when you do that, that's what becomes, understanding becomes a part of education. But that doesn't mean that the prospect will come out and ask you for an order form, an application, or a link to get involved. It's not what it means. It doesn't mean that all you do is just educate them and expect them to ask you for the information. It's your job to guide them to that decision. Okay? Now, what do I mean by that? Okay, so the key to success in this area is a combination of having good posture, okay? Very important. Your posture has always got to be, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is excited about. This is what I'm excited about. This is where I'm going, and I'm just looking for the right people to team up with me to go to the place where I'm going. So the key to success in this area is a combination of having not just good posture, but also asking very good questions. And that's what I want to talk with you about this morning. So good posture, as we know, means how you carry yourself. Your words and your actions will help your prospect feel a lot more confident in joining WBRX, and they'll also minimize any doubt that they have when they start, leaning on your conviction and your belief. So I just want to tell you, when I first got started in this business in 1992, my personal posture was pretty bad, okay? I was trying to get people instead of pursuing the noble, perspective of, basically educating and helping people understand. I think that when I look back on those early years, I was just very emotionally attached to the outcome. Okay. You could even say that I was so emotionally attached to the outcome that I probably came off a little bit needy at times. Every time, I would get to the point in time where I would, have someone, it's time for someone to decide, whether they're going to get involved in the business or not. I think that this is what I was so focused on. I really wanted that so bad. But I think that the prospect, when I look back at some of those early occurrences, they could feel my emotional attachment to the outcome. And usually, I think that kind of scared them off. That was my experience. Now, the lack of results I was having on the amount of people that I was talking to made me kind of come to, you know, come to terms with it. I kind of had to realize that, you know, it was something wrong with what I was doing. You can't assume that there are so many people that you're talking to are just not going to be interested. That assumption will, you know, kind of seep into everything that you do, which led to that predictable result, that they weren't going to join. And I was starting to expect that they weren't going to join. So what I learned when I look back on it, number one, is most of the time I wasn't prepared. I didn't really have an expectation. I didn't have, you know, at that time, we didn't have a link set up where they could just go online and enroll. I didn't have the application. I didn't have the necessarily startup materials. I didn't really have the things that were necessary for them to get started because I wasn't expecting them to get started after I had so many occurrences of them saying, I'm not so sure. So what I realized, and when you think about it, the subconscious impact that this had on my prospects started to kind of blend one to the other. So I went through a lot of challenges when I first started getting people to take a look at the business because at the end of the day, I just think that I had a lack of belief on some level and a lack of professionalism in my approach. So when I, instead of asking, you know, the right questions, right, and listening intently to the answers, I just found myself getting into that mode of trying harder and harder, and I would just talk and talk and talk and talk. And the more focused I became on, you know, being interesting with my information, rather than what they were interested in, I was more focused on them being, on me being interesting and the information I was sharing being interested than I was on what they were interested in. And so then I started recognizing, you know what, I got to start looking at the results that professionals are having and modeling myself after that behavior. Okay, I had to go through that. It wasn't easy. So what I did, I started paying attention to the what I perceived to be the very best closers and the people that were having great results. And I started to kind of model some of my behavior after what they did. Okay. And I started asking a lot of questions. I would literally get on the phone and I would ask some of these top guys. I'd say, you know, what do you, tell me specifically what you're thinking about what you're doing in this process. And slowly through that process of asking enough questions, and I wasn't, listen, to me, the outcome was more important. I needed to figure out what I was doing wrong. And I started to see the flaws in my own approach. The first thing I learned, is that professionals were emotionally detached from the outcome. Okay. In other words, their goal was completely education and understanding while, you know, helping a prospect make a decision would have a positive impact in their life, which is no question. Everybody wants to get the deal done. They were the opposite of needy. They weren't trying to get anybody. In fact, honestly, they were just trying to help people accomplish what needed to be accomplished. Now, this was a big revelation for me. And I'll never forget the first time I had someone share the statistics that people have in this country when it comes to a business opportunity. When I started to recognize that, 56% of the people factually, in most cases, a family with two people working at the same time, send their kids to daycare or whatever, were earning somewhere between $25,000 and $26,000 a year or less. When I recognized that over the 56% of people earning that kind of money in this country, it kind of changed my perspective. I recognized immediately that $500 to $1,000 a month meant a lot of money to them. Okay. When I realized that 10% of all the working people in this country today, as we sit here today, earn $50,000 a year or more, that was a major revelation for me, okay? Because I was earning more than that. When I realized that most people weren't earning that, I was like, man, they need an opportunity to start doing something other than just working their full-time job, waking up every morning, having coffee, having breakfast, burping, doing what they need to do, going out to the, driveway, getting in their car, rolling out, going to work, coming back home, and then repeating, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. I realized that most people were not excited about even going to work and doing what they were doing. They just did it because they rationalized that behavior. Only 3% of all the working people in the country were, even $100,000 a year more. Okay, which is an amazing statistic in my mind once I got that concept. And only 1% of all the working people in this country earn over $195,000 a year more. Now, here's the most alarming statistic that I learned at that time, and now it's probably about 88, 89%. But at that time, about 87% of all the working people in this country retire at age 65 with an average net worth of $6,800. Now, many of you on the call right now probably don't fit that. I get that. That's not the point. It's not direct. This information is not at all directed to you. It's directed to the statistical sociological profile of where most people are in this country. That is a fact. You don't have to listen. Listen, that information didn't come from me or Sean or this company. Just look it up for yourself. Go to any information that you believe is factual. You can go to the IRS.gov and you can look up the statistical analysis of where most people are that file income tax statistically in terms of their income. Okay. And here's what's amazing. Here's the most amazing statistic I can share with you. It doesn't matter whether you're earning $56,000. It doesn't matter whether you're earning $26,000 a year or less, or you're earning $196,000 a year or more. You know where everybody ends up? Where statistically, all of them, 87% of all of them end up in that same category of retiring basically at age 65 with an average net worth of $6,800. Now, how would that be true? There's alarming reality is most people that are earning $195,000, $196,000 a year or more are spending the same percentage of their money that the people that are earning $56,000 or $26,000 a year or less. So that's the problem. That's a major problem. Now, we could talk about that all day and night, but the other most alarming statistic is that they've never considered the philosophy that wages are good, but profits are better. You know, wages will make you a living. Profits will make you a fortune. That's a basic philosophy. Sometimes it's really unique. People don't know, what do I have to do to get into the outcome of profits are better than wages? Well, you have to first accept that that's a better reality, and then you have to start creating additional forms of revenue to what you're currently doing 40, 50, 60 hours a week. That's a revelation that we've used and shared with people because it's not about us. It's just a statistical fact of life, right? So these are information. Secondly, I think that I looked at these leaders, these amazing guys in the industry that were having great results, and I realized that they were very assumptive in their approach. They expect the person to join them within the business. That's what I realized, because their belief of their opportunity would basically be a benefit to their prospect. Now, this was a big thing for me, because once I started to realize, you know what, my opportunity is exactly what they do need. They're not doing me a favor. I'm doing them a favor. My approach, my cadence, the way that I was carrying myself, the way that I was sharing those words about where I was going, casting my vision about how I was going to accomplish that. So then I started to see a whole different response in people when I was sharing the opportunity. I wasn't begging. I wasn't pleading. I was casting vision. I was talking about where I was going and how I was going to get there. And my approach was very assumptive. Okay. The third thing that I learned that was very interesting is that the people that I found were having great success, they learned how to promote them, how to have a strong promotion of themselves as much as they did the product or the opportunity. Now, here's what I mean by that. Okay. When you start sharing information with people and they ask you, tell me why I should make a decision to do this. Well, it's very simple. I made the decision to do it. If it's good enough for me, why would I have any problem with you doing it? I mean, it's good enough for me and my family. I can still remember the day that I got this concept. I said to you and myself, you know what? The truth is, if I'm pursuing this business and it's good enough for me, it's certainly good enough for anybody I would be talking to. And here's the other thing that really, when this burst upon my consciousness about 1994, 1995, my business exploded. Here's what it was. I would tell people, and here's what I heard professionals doing, and when I heard them do it, and then it actually became real for me, the outcome became mathematically ridiculous. I just started recognizing, you know what, guys? Here's the real thing. We've got phenomenal product. You got a great company. You got great leadership, great business model. But here's the deal. You get me. You get me. And we're going to do this together. I'm not going to do it for you, but I'm never going to stop working with you unless you stop working with me. And here's the deal. What do you think that the odds are in our favor if we do this together. So one of the reasons why people kind of look at, you know, they look at Sean and myself and they see resolute belief in what we're doing. Well, first of all, I believe in him. I think he believes in me. We believe in us. And we believe that together we can accomplish a lot and we can help a lot of other people do the same thing. Was there a point in time maybe in Sean's life and career where he didn't have a strong belief in himself, what he was doing? Of course, myself, absolutely. What changed? We changed. We made the conscious decision to change that, and then we became more valuable in our own minds to other people. This is a big shift. This is a big one. When it came to the outcome that we had, or at least I had when I was helping people, you know, begin to start the business. The fourth thing that I learned is always being prepared. Okay. In order to get a good person involved in the business, I don't want to seem like I'm just randomly going through things or hey, Mitchell, you got those, you happen to have any of those product guides? I don't have any with me. What does that make me look like? Makes me look like an unprepared fool. And I'm not saying anything. I know some of you guys have come in the office, you've had your prospects, and we've had to give them the stuff. It isn't that you're a fool. It's just that you don't understand the psychology. You don't know what your prospect's looking for. If they see that you have ultimate, if you're the one that's ultimately prepared, why would they have to ask anybody else for anything? So you then become a dominant reason why they should get involved and start the business. So I looked at these professionals, and what I realized, what stuck out to me, and what I hope that you guys can take home, is they just acted like consultants. Okay, they acted like, basically they were just helping people with challenges that they knew that they had because they themselves had some of those challenges, and they would just ask a bunch of questions before they could offer any solutions. So the professionals that use this technique, it's a very powerful tool. Okay. So if you can imagine, it took me a while to figure all this out. Okay. It wasn't like it happened right away. But one thing is to have the information that we're sharing. It's another thing to put it into action. So I wasn't as talented as many of the pros I was working with. These guys were extremely talented, right? But what I could do is I could take my personality and my behavior and I could model it in some extent to the way that they were conducting themselves. I started learning to act emotionally detached. Okay, it wasn't that I was, this wasn't how I started off in the beginning. Okay, I started acting very assumptive that people would want to join me. Of course, I had what they needed. It wasn't them that had what I needed. I had what they needed. And then I started becoming prepared. Every time I would come to a meeting, I'd have my briefcase. At that time, it was a different looking briefcase than I have today, but it was a briefcase. And I had all my paperwork lined up in a file. I had all my applications put together. I had all my collateral material put together. I was prepared at any particular point in time, not only to have someone enroll and start that I was working with personally, but I did that with people within my organization. So as time went on in my business, I became a little more proficient. I acted less and less, I didn't know what I was doing. I started to act more on my belief and my vision. And then I started to make some significant changes as I went through the business. So here, to conceptualize everything and to consolidate this into some basic questions, okay, that you can consider. Let's talk about the questions. If you were a consultant and it was your job to figure out, an opportunity that might be a good fit or not good fit for someone else, what would you do? What questions would you ask? Keep that in the back of your mind, right? In helping a person make the decision to cross over, you may want to start thinking in terms of the types of questions that you'd want to ask. Okay. Now, I would recommend staying away from questions like, hey, what did you think? Of course, that always leads to where, them asking a lot of questions or giving you thoughts that go from here to there. So this is what I had to learn, how to ask the right questions. Before you're going to get the right answers, you have to learn how to ask the right questions. Okay. You can ask people questions like, did it make sense to you? Or what did you like best about what you just saw? That was probably my favorite. It always is. It still is. Pretty exciting, isn't it? Can you see how this could be an opportunity for you? See, these are examples of the things that I have learned during that time of getting people to that point where they're either going to decide to do it or not do it. And I would, you know, I would say to people, let me ask you a question on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, in terms of getting started right now, where do you see yourself? And if they were anywhere at a 5 or below, I'd have to kind of sit back and say, okay, let's go through the information that's going to help you get to a much higher place on the scale, because ultimately I'm here to work with you if you want to team up with me and partner to go out and build a large marketing distribution company that will become, you know, throughout the United States and globally all over the world. You know, where do we need to kind of solve whatever reservations you might have or doubt you might have, right? And so I would say that I'd spend 20% of my time. Listen, if you need more information, I'm happy to guide you to the next piece of information, the next exposure. It's not like I would just throw them away. I would just start rendering myself to my immediate time I would spend, and I would start focusing my time and attention on those people that were at that higher level or above. So let me give you these four questions. I'm going to conclude here. I'm going to turn this over to my partner, Sean Baker. Number one, based upon what you've just seen, this is, of course, along the lines of expecting that they've gone through, you know, at least a Zoom call, maybe a personal phone call, you know, with upline member, maybe the, you know, president of the company, maybe myself, whomever, or they've seen a Zoom call. Based upon the information that you've seen, you know, if you were to get started with this company on a part-time basis, approximately, I was asked this question, how much money would you need to earn on a monthly basis to make this worth your time? So instead of asking, you know, instead of asking questions, something like along the lines of how would you like to make 10 grand a month? You know, rather than ask them how they'd like to make 10 grand a month, ask them, you know, based upon what you've seen on, you know, approximately how much money would you like to earn to make this worth your time, your effort, and your energy? So you're starting to divulge information from them. So basically, instead of prescribing what you think they want, just ask them what it would take to make it worth their time, because the number might be a lot less than 10 grand a month. And then you can design and accurately forecast what's required for them to accomplish that. That's a very important topic to cover when it comes to making decisions. Number two, approximately how many hours would you be able to commit on a weekly basis to develop the income that you're looking for? Okay? Someone tells me they want to make 10 grand a month, but they want to work 2 hours a week. We got a problem. I got to decide to be honest with them and say, listen, we got to change one or two things. We got to change the number or change the amount of hours that you're going to need to commit to accomplish that. What happens is that immediately they have to go back in their head and check their own mental, you know, they have to look at their own calendar and see how much time that they'd like to invest in making that kind of money, or they have to decide, you know, a different number. Now we're starting to build a business plan and get a decision based upon integrity and what's real. Question number three, approximately how many months would you be willing to work the kind of, if someone says to me, Barry, I want to make 10 grand a month and I want to work 10 to 15 hours a week. Okay. Sounds like we can probably orchestrate a plan for that. Approximately how many months would you be willing to commit to accomplish that goal? Okay. Would you be willing to commit 6 months, a year? What is the time frame that you would be willing to focus in? Not telling them telling me what they would be willing to commit right off the top of their head. And then I just basically say, listen, if I could, this is the last question. If I could show you, any one of you, if I could show you Ruben, Gail, Daniel, Mitchell, Michael, Sarah, Sinley, Mike, Sean, any, I'm just going through the names on the register here, guys, Lance, JP, if I could show you how to take your responses, if I could show you how to take example, you know, the amount of hours that you're willing to commit on a weekly basis to generate the income that you want on a monthly basis, how many, you know, basically I'm answering the questions. I'm basically taking their answers. The question number one, question number two, question number three, you basically will come up with, you know, the specific amount of time that they're willing to commit, you're basically taking how long that they'd be willing to commit to make that time happen. And then you're basically saying, look, where do you see yourself getting started in the business? It's of no consequence to me or to the company, because we're going to work to build it together anyway. There's one choice that you can make that will get you probably generating more immediate income faster. And today you can look at our comp plan, and we're making, you know, some shifts and changes so that people that are actually can, you know, focused in on these goals of going out and making income as they're building their long-term business can make more money. But let's just say that they want to get involved today at a lesser cost, at a higher discount on their original purchase, and position themselves in 2021 to start hitting the ball hard. This is where they see themselves. Let's say that they start at manager. Is that good or bad? That's great. You have a person now that's at least made a decision to start a manager that's based upon their assessment of their contact base, their credibility within their contact base, their financial situation, all very basic questions, right? And now, how much time are you willing to commit on a weekly basis to accomplish the income that you'd like to have? You know, and then based upon that commitment, how long would you be willing to commit? Would it be 3 months, 6 months? If you're wanting to make 10 grand a month and you're willing to work 2 hours a week and you want it and you'll give it 3 months, my answer to you is that's probably not going to happen. If you're wanting to commit 10 to 15 hours of focused time and your outcome is, you look how much money you need to make for that effort, would be about 10 grand a month, and you're willing to commit about 6 months, I think we have a reasonable plan of action on a conservative basis to help you accomplish that. So all it is, guys, is a formula. It's a function of, yes, understanding the comp plan, understanding the behavior and the activity that's required, and then you'll find it's so much easier for people to make a decision to get started, right? Hey, if today is the last day of the month and you want to help someone get it started in the business so they can become effective next month, that's a great decision. Let's get you started today so that we can get you to go out in the month of December and then take the energy that you have and start generating income based upon being effective in the business at a place that's right for you. If they start as of December 1st, here's the anecdote. Hey, here's the good news. We got you in your qualifying month, and we got you early. Let's set up a designated goal to get you as high in the comp plan as we possibly can so that by the time we get to the end of December, it may not be because you started at a high level. It may be because you started lower. And now we can get you, it's not about where you started, it's about where you finish. You say, well, Barry, what if they started a high place at the beginning of the month? No problem. We can help them generate income, and we can become creative, and we can now show them what they need to do to help other people get involved. And you may be the person as of 2021 that captures that income. Right now, they're paid rank bonuses. They're paid bonuses on whatever they do the moment they get involved. If they get involved at any rank within the business, they can start generating those incomes. What I'm saying to you is this, guys. Once you've decided that you know that you have what they need and you're directed, you're focused, it's matter of fact, your posture is correct, your cadence is correct, they've seen the information, now you're just collecting the decision. Where do you see yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 in the business? No problem. How much time do you have? Start going into the details of not just them getting involved, but how they're going to generate income once they make a decision to get involved. So, guys, this is available. Information is available by podcast. Any parts of it that you need, we're happy to send you. It's all about just understanding some of the specific points so that you can take this information that I've learned and then duplicate it. And you'll find if you start focusing in that your ratio of success with the folks that you're meeting with and talking with will increase. It's only a matter of time, guys, before you start taking this information and start also delivering it to the team members that you have, and you'll be shocked and amazed how fast you'll be able to build this and grow this. So with that, I'm going to turn the call over to my partner, Sean Baker. You know, basically is one of those candidates that listened to the same information that you're listening to. The difference was he didn't just listen to it. He took the information, and he basically executed it. He basically took the information, he went out and did what he did with it, and it ended up to be a seven-figure example of what he helped a lot of other people do too. So with that, Sean, I'm going to turn it over to you, brother. Thank you so much for all you do. Excited about what we're going to be doing in 2021, and I'm going to let you take it from here. Thank you.
Hey, Barry, great job. Good morning, everybody. Happy deer season. I mean, happy December. Appreciate you guys jumping on the call this morning. Hope you're bundled up and enjoying some of this actual Texas you know, cool weather. We don't get a whole lot of this. So it's actually quite refreshing. And I don't know if it's a combination of, you know, getting up early in the morning and going for a run and having a couple of cups of coffee to start my morning, or if it's just the beautiful sunshiny, cold weather, what it is. But I just feel a newness coming, you know, a vigor and a passion for kind of everything. It's one of those deals where I feel like if I were to go out and wash my car right now, which I don't have time to do, but that I would want to do the best I could do. I would want to do it with excellence. Like I could get over committed, I feel like, to a number of projects because I'm kind of tired of watching people kind of zombie through life. And as Barry so eloquently talked about, you know, trudging towards that 87% of people who retire with a net worth of $6,800. And then you don't look very far and you see, and I'm not talking about the politics of it, so please don't think I'm being political, but you look at the Donald Trumps of the world, or you look at the Bill Gates of the world, or you look at, oh gosh, and I'm not trying to be funny. I'm drawing a blank on the Apple guy's name. Anyway, the people that started Apple, Steve Jobs and, you know, Grant Cardone, you don't have to look very far and you see people accomplishing more in one lifetime than 1,000 people combined will accomplish with theirs. And as Barry said, he was very kind and complimentary of me taking this information and applying it and helping myself and helping my family and helping others. And that did happen. It's a true story. But the truth is, I think part of me was just too dumb to think I could fail. Like, part of me was just too hard-headed and too stubborn to think that this wouldn't work for me. You know, a lot of times, especially when you're talking about an opportunity, and particularly when you're talking about an opportunity in direct sales or network marketing industry, people just love to spit on your campfire, man. They just love to bring you down. And they'll tell you, oh, man, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, and if we unmuted the lines, I could stop there, and you guys could in unison chime in. I would say, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, and in almost in unison, you guys would likely say, because I would have, you would say, well, then it probably is, ha, 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 and everyone would have a laugh at the old cliche. Well, I was in a situation in my life where it literally felt like somebody ripped the blinders off. I mean, like I had been walking through, you know, they told me to go to school, get a good education. Well, I bought that. And I'm not saying I'm not anti-education, guys, but I have a number of friends. And I'm not talking about doctors or lawyers or CPAs or people that require a specialty or a certification. I'm not talking about that. But my son went to Texas State University, paid 4 years of college. He got in, he got out. He didn't dally. He didn't mess around. He didn't waste a bunch of my money. And he was an economics major. Well, now he runs a boat marina in Canyon Lake. And my best friend since fifth grade has a master's degree in criminal justice. He's a federal agent. He makes the same money as the guy that sits at the desk across from him who has a four-year degree. And my buddy's got $100,000 in debt, in college debt, that his financial planner literally told him, hey, I've got good news and bad news. The bad news is you'll never pay off your college debt. You will die with college debt. The good news is you don't have to worry about it anymore. Just commit to that payment for the rest of your life, and they'll write off the rest. My best friend is so discouraged right now about his education. I'd say borderlines on depression. He feels like he was duped. Now, again, I'm not, guys, I want you to hear me. I've got two college graduates, and I suspect out of my four children, I'll have two more. But the blinders, the blindness of just doing it because mom said so or dad said so or a guidance counselor said so, they don't teach you how to do your taxes. They don't teach you entrepreneurialism. But they will let you run up a big bill, a big college debt, while you figure it out. That's guidance in our culture as it relates to education. And this isn't about the education system. I'm not here to politicize and revamp education as we know it. What I'm talking about is people that walk around and don't know that 87% of the people retire with an average net worth of $6,800. Now, it doesn't take much to convince them, particularly people my age and maybe a hair older. I'll speak to my 50-somethings on the phone. You know, my mom was born in 1947. I don't know mathematically how old that makes her because I can't math and talk to you guys. But let's just say she's in her mid-70s. My dad's in his late 60s. I've got two kids through college, praise Jesus. But then I've got a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old, you know, that I'm gearing towards finishing high school and probably going to college. So I'm of the generation where I will still be supporting my children to some degree or another, and likely my parents to some degree or another, because they bought into the myth as well. Go into debt, have credit cards. Now, again, not to sound Dave Ramsey on you guys, but they don't understand that putting money on a credit card and then leaving it there, you know, and they're earning interest, or the credit card company are earning interest on things like their groceries or their gasoline or their Christmas tree, because they just didn't understand kind of economics 101. And so I've gotten myself a little distracted because I want to touch on a couple of the great points that Barry mentioned, but I will just tell you what it took for me in this journey was someone like Barry, and it happened to be Barry in this case, but I fortunately was able to do this with others. I saw other distributors guide and mentor and lead other people to just take the blinders off. That's all. We're not over here selling, you know, to drink the Kool-Aid or I mean, you guys have probably even heard me end presentations that we've done, that whether you get involved with WBRX or not, leave this presentation and go pursue vigorously. Don't wait for, go find, go seek, go pursue some form of residual income, because there will be a day when either we cannot work or we simply do not want to work anymore. And the only way that you can have financial freedom and security and independence from the day you can't work or the day you choose not to work is to have some sort of passive residual income that lasts longer than you do. However long you're going to be on this life, if you want to leave something to your children and potentially your children's children, then you're going to have to make arrangements to do that now. Like, the clock is ticking. And in my, you know, I just turned 44 in November, and man, I've never felt it more. I've never felt more that I literally just finished the front nine of life, and I've officially stepped on the 10th tee box for the back nine of life. I mean, that's how I feel. And I'm invigorated by it. I'm not discouraged. I'm not sad or weird or having a midlife crisis. I'm encouraged. I've learned a lot on the front nine, so to speak. And now I'm ready to take the 10th tee box. Now, if you've ever played golf with me or heard Barry and I, you know, giving each other a hard time, I don't know why this is, but pretty consistently, I shave strokes off the back nine. So if I shoot a 50 on the front, it's not uncommon that I might shoot a 40 on the back. I improve as I go. As I continue to play, the longer I play, the better I get per round, and of course, as a composite. So I say all that to say I've learned a lot in 44 years. I've got a lot to learn in the next 44 years, but I plan on doing things better, and specifically, and this finally gets me on point, with a different sense of urgency, not a panic, guys. Please don't think I'm talking about being desperate, pushing people to make decisions, coming off panicky. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about simple, basic truths and urgency. If I didn't get up and run this morning in the dark, I have a very busy Monday, it simply wasn't going to happen. So I either got up and ran, or I resolved myself that that wasn't going to happen today. But either way, the sun was about to rise, and it was decision time. I love when people book a vacation and then invite people on vacation, because they do it very differently. You know, you meet that friend at HEB who says, man, it's great, Barry, I hadn't seen you in forever. It's great to see you. We should catch up sometime. Most times that conversation goes nowhere with most people. I would say, ironically, it probably parallels the economic figures that Barry shared with us. I bet about 80 to 90% of people that bump into a casual friend say we should get together sometime and have coffee. They don't pull out their smartphone. They don't pull out their calendar. They say, yeah, I'll shoot you a text and we'll plan a time and we'll get together. There's no urgency, and I would argue that 9 out of 10 times that never happens. But then you've got a small group of people that say, man, it's great to see you. I've been wanting to catch up. I've had you on my heart. Let's have coffee. How's next Tuesday? Even if next Tuesday doesn't work, there's a different level of urgency with people who operate like that. I'm going to tell you right now, if Barry and I, with weather like this, I know one thing. If Barry wants to play golf and he throws me a text and says, would you be interested in playing golf this week? And I say, yes, what day do you have in mind? He's going to ask me about one or two more questions, and he's booking a tee time. How is Thursday morning? Yes, I can make that work. Boom, in my text message, I've got a tee time. There's complete urgency. And it's not just, and that's just who Barry is. I'm not talking about golf. I'm talking about anything he does that he deems important to him. He is a good steward of his time, and he does it with urgency. So it's funny, you know, people talk about booking, you know, oh, we ought to go on vacation. It's been a rough 2020. We ought to go on vacation. And then I've got other friends that have already booked their first two vacations, one right before Christmas, maybe one in January or February. They act. They're action-oriented people. So you have to watch your prospect and know who you're dealing with, because a lot of times in this business, we get discouraged at their lack of urgency when the harsh truth, and I'm sorry, guys, I'm pointing the finger at you. I'm pointing the finger at me. The harsh truth is we don't calibrate. We don't set the stage for any sort of urgency, and they just act like they act. You know, Barry had an old friend named Lou, and Lou used to always say, what do you expect from a pig but a grunt? And he wasn't calling people pigs. He was saying that's their nature. Pigs grunt. Cows moo. People, you know, walk through life and lackadaisically, you know, unurgent, impassive, and with blinders on most times. I mean, that's why there's movies. You know, there wasn't a movie called The Matrix. There was a dynasty called The Matrix. They made three of those movies, very sci-fi, very weird, and it was all about taking a blue pill or a red pill, I forget, and understanding that there's an entire different way to live life. Some people do it with urgency, as if every moment matters, and some people live life as if they're going to be here forever with no consequence. Like it doesn't matter what they do today because they'll just do tomorrow. Though they do nothing today and they do nothing tomorrow, and then they look back at the age of 65, and if they're 87 percentile, and they go, man, I did nothing with most of my life, and now I have nothing. And they become, and I'm not trying to be insensitive, but if we're talking about just the sheer economics of it, they become a burden on someone else. I love my parents. I will do anything for my parents that I possibly can, but taking care of them financially, in addition to their almost assured health issues that will you know, approach them in their 80s and, God willing, into their 90s, the financial aspect of it, if they're not prepared, will be a burden. By definition, it will be burdensome on me. And so I'm not unique. I'm not special. There are so many people going through the exact same thing that I am. Now, so just to recap, when you're talking to someone that is wishy-washy about tee times, they're wishy-washy about going to the football game with you, they're wishy-washy if they can or can't come to the barbecue this weekend because they need to check with their spouse first, whatever it is, don't be discouraged when they're wishy-washy with your opportunity. You are going to have to be the thermostat, not the temperature, right? The thermostat you set at whatever temperature you want. If you like it cold, set it at 65. You like it, you know, warm, set it at 75. But once you set it, you are in charge of the temperature. The temperature outside may rise or fall, but the thermostat is what keeps it consistent. So you have to be your own thermostat. You have to set the pace. You have to set the cadence. You have to be responsible for the urgency that people receive this opportunity with, or lack of urgency, as the case may be, right? It's just how it is. So the other thing I want to talk about real quickly, and I want to try to end on time if at all possible, is understanding people's emotions. Look, I have three beautiful daughters. I love them very much, I love them very much, period. In addition, they are very opinionated. They like what they like. One of them is addicted to Chick-fil-A, just loves Chick-fil-A, would literally eat Chick-fil-A breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And as a young dad who didn't know much about girls in general, particularly raising girls, I would just say when it was, you know, mealtime-ish, hey, are you guys hungry? Do you want to go out to eat? Well, three daughters who each like two or three or four different places, all of a sudden now we're kind of arguing. Even if I was opinionless, if I said I'll go wherever you guys want, so remove me from the equation, not good leadership, but let's just use that as an example. And my daughter, you know, Sydney wants to go to these three places, and Christian wants to go to these three places, and Abigail wants to go to these three places. Now we're debating over one of nine places that we're going to go eat. Well, it took me a minute, but as I got smarter and the 2.0 version of dad, I still engage with my girls. I still give them the perception of an opinion of where we're going to go eat. But now I make it one of two things. You guys want Chinese or pizza? You want pizza or you want barbecue? It's more like going to the eye doctor, you know, and that's why they do that. I've learned that after time. One of our dear friends, Barry and I's dear friends, Dr. Manuel, it was an eye care provider at NASA. I asked him one time, I said, why the 1-2 thing? What's better, 1 or 2? 1 or 2? And you go through this series and series and series. He said, it's simply not to overwhelm the mind. Whatever's going on in the brain actually affects your vision, and the brain is such a powerful machine that it will skew your vision based on what you're thinking. And so instead of giving you too many options, they just go one at a time, 1 or 2, 1 or 2. And so as I started doing that with my daughters, it became, we quit fighting about food. We became more efficient. They, you know, one would pick this time, one would pick next time. We still had fun with it, but instead of having so much noise in the signal, so to speak, so much static in the line and fighting over 9 different restaurants, we just took all that stuff off the table and it became 1 or 2. And I think sometimes, you know, our collateral materials are great. Our webinars are great. Our Zoom calls are great. Our recorded calls are great. But if you don't guide your prospect through that information and give them small bite-sized pieces and control the pace, the urgency by which they consume those pieces, then you're already starting to let your prospect kind of dictate how this is going to go, and it's going to frustrate you, and frankly, it's going to frustrate and discourage them. I've seen it happen time and time and time again. The last thing I'll conclude with is just that Barry made a great point, and I noticed it. I actually physically felt it happen one time. I was working with a prospect at a conference, like a WB Arts University or equivalent, and they were very interested. His name was Kevin, but Kevin had just recently lost his mother. He almost didn't come to the event, which, of course, I would have completely understood. But selfishly, he was my only guest. He was my only prospect. And I was full-time in the business at the time. And if he didn't get involved, I was going to not have a check that month. Now, I had had a good month the month before, so I was able to kind of stretch my dollar. But I was really pretty dependent on Kevin getting involved in the business and hopefully, you know, in a big way. Now, he did get involved, okay, so the story has a happy ending, but I remember him making his commitment to National Marketing Director and me audibly exhaling. I had been holding my breath to see if this guy was going to get involved and what the fate of my month was going to be. And I remember it was at that exact time I swore to myself that it would never happen again. That even if I would never just have one prospect come all the way down to the end of the month as a full-time distributor. Now, if you're spare time, you're part-time, you're independently wealthy, you're in a different situation, then maybe I'm not talking to you. But if you're full-time in this business and you need to make $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a month and you're dilly-dallying with one prospect and your financial security, for lack of a better word, or your financial outcome hangs in the balance of that one prospect, it's not the prospect's issue. It's yours. It's yours. You need to go 1 for 5, not 1 for 1, or 2 for 10, or 3 for 15, or 10 for 20. But if you go 0 for 1 and it breaks your month, it's your responsibility. It's my responsibility. If you go 1 for 1, drop to your knees and thank the big man upstairs, but it's still a bad, bad formula for success. And I did it, and I did it, and I did it until one day I just said, dang it, it stops now. I'm not going to go to a university with one prospect and my financial future rises or falls with this one person. It's not fair to them, and it's not fair to me. And so fortunately for me, Kevin did get involved. I let out my audible sigh that I had been holding my breath, and it changed my life. It changed who I was. It changed my relationship with Kevin. It changed my relationship with all of my distributors. And I never went to another conference that I didn't have at least 4 or 5 people sitting to my left and to my right, setting an example for folks. Now, did I go 0 for 4 or 0 for 5 at some conferences? I don't think I ever did that. Did I go 1 for 5? Yeah, I did. But I didn't panic and audibly, exhale a breath when I went 1 for 5, because I could have gone 4 for 5, but I knew I was going to get somebody. So all that to say, guys, it's almost 2021. This has been, and pardon my French, it's been a hell of a year. It's just been crazy. But the thing I like, it's kind of like when people talk to me about my military career, going through basic training or being in Iraq. I wouldn't want to go through basic training again, but it taught me I can survive damn near anything. Well, I don't want to go through 2020 again, and God willing, we get this election stuff resolved, and whatever happens, we get into 2021, and we get some semblance of normalcy back in our life. But believe you me, we're stronger for it. We're better for it. We're better for having survived 2020, some weird 9-month-long global basic training. I don't want to go through it again, but I've learned some things. We've survived it. We're beginning to really turn the corner and thrive. And now is the time that you, each of you individually, and then we collectively begin to really, really kick it into a higher gear and do something very different than what we've done. And the people around us, guys, they need it. They need that light. They need that lighthouse. They need an opportunity. Again, whether it's WBRX or not, we welcome everyone. We aspire to be appealing to everyone. But the truth is we won't. You can't please everybody with products, with opportunity, you know, no matter what it is. But we believe our time is now. We believe it's time to act. And so the call to action is simply revisit your plan, revisit December of 2020 and how to use it to make money and springboard into 2021 and lead people to an opportunity that literally could change your life. So with that, Barry, thank you so much. I kick it back over to you. I apologize. I went a couple of minutes long, but I just had a lot to say today. So thank you.
Hey, great job, man. I really appreciate the information was solid. I think, guys, you know, there's so much value if you just take time to listen. The key, you know, my big takeaway from what Sean offered was really, you know, hey, do the work that you need to on the front end so that you don't have to freak out and panic on the back end. Put yourself into a position to where you have enough activity, and there's no doubt that your posture, your demeanor, and the way that you approach a business will be totally different, if you do the work required to have the activity on the front end. And guys, listen, I want to just say, do we believe that everybody's going to take this information and put it into action? No, we don't. In fact, I'm willing to bet that that's not the case. It's not about that. It's that we have a commitment. And our commitment is to be honest and transparent as a company. Do what we can do to provide the very best products and do the very best job that we can to make sure that we provide the very best business model and make sure that we ship, fulfill, deliver, and pay commissions in a timely way and offer you honest, transparent information always. So if we maintain our commitments, we're resolved, and we believe without a doubt that ultimately the success that you will have and that we will have as an organization will be far more than if we buy into other principles and ideologies that often sometimes people use to circumvent and short circuit the very essence of their business model and their opportunities. So with that, guys, thank you so much for the time that you've spent here with us this morning. What a phenomenal week this is going to be. Looking forward to all that's to come. And we'll see you tomorrow at 3 p.m. on our Zoom call. And hopefully you can attend that and bring guests. We'd love to meet them and share our story with them and share how we are so excited about working with you to help them potentially become part of our business in any way that they would choose to. So with that, guys, God bless. Have a great day. We'll talk with you very soon. Bye-bye.